Question number 10. Christian Christmas Seminar. How about that? Mm-hmm. Next stop, Illumination. I am spiritually illumined. Lecture 10. I am a living example. I am a living example. Now, how about that? I am a living example. As I was walking the path this morning, I was thinking of all of you and thinking of all the people that are in my world, and I was thinking how marvelous everyone is and how everybody is filled with all sorts of desires and wishes and wants, how everybody has their particular need, their particular demand from life. And I tell people, do not go around telling people what you don't have. Do not tell people that you are sick. Do not tell people that you are of a problem. Do not tell people that you're unhappy. Do not tell people any of these things. However, you, in your brilliance, think that it means you shouldn't come and talk to me. And I say, come and talk to me, for I am working with you as a teacher, as a sharer, as a person who is unbiased about what it is that you're facing, and I'm going to give you a swift kick right where it's going to do the most good to get you thinking in the right direction. So, it's a good idea whenever you're facing something that is difficult or something that's challenging or something that personal illness or family problems or attitudes, just come and talk to me and we'll straighten it out. Well, straighten out your thinking, because I'm sort of like your extra mind upstairs, you know. I belong to you. I'm not somebody who thinks these things for myself. I'm not somebody who remembers them. I'm not somebody who's going to tell other people about them, unless you say, this is open market, then that's fine. But normally, if people come and tell me something that they have really a problem and they want to learn from it, I'll talk with them. If they want to come and just tell me like they tell everybody else, you know, I got a head cold and I got a terrible head cold and oh my goodness, that's a terrible head cold. And then I say, I think that's wonderful. I think that's wonderful. I'd love to see your head cold. You know, we can improve on that. We can even make it worse. You can get pneumonia. You can get, you know, all sorts of good stuff. What's the matter with you, Herb? Hey, you came to me telling me your problem. You didn't come to me saying, Herb, I want to handle this situation I'm going through. Will you help me? You just came to me like some other garbage on the street that you're sharing your garbage with. And so therefore, I just share it with you. I will not tell you how to think, how to act, what to do. You come to me and tell me you're the princess of Transylvania, and I'll say, super, wonderful. When can I come to your coronation, you know? I believe you. I believe everything you tell me. Because you are a spiritual master. You are in charge of your life. You are creating your life with every word that you do. That's our topic today. I'm a living example. Everything you say, everything you think, everything you do expresses who you are. Good, bad, or indifferent. You know? So, if you come to me and say, Herb, I have this condition and I want to get rid of it. I said, great, let's go for it. So we just dig right into it and say, hey, I'm whole and perfect. I'm fantastic. I'm glorious. I'm wonderful. But if you come to me and you just treat me like the man on the street and you're telling everybody about my operation, oh, my terrible cold, oh, my terrible this, and I say, hey, that is super. You're telling me something that's exciting for you. You're telling me something that you want to continue, that you want to make even more exciting. And I'll say, let's go for it. You know? Somebody came up to me one time. I'm not a very nice person. And they said, Herb, I got a rip here in my trousers. I said, fine. You know? Herb, I got a rip in my trousers. What am I going to do? And I said, well, sew it up. If you don't want it there, if you want it there, then make it bigger. What do you mean? I got this rip in my trousers. I said, come here. So I took the trousers and I ripped them all the way. There, now you got a rip in your trousers. What did you do? You destroyed my trousers. No, I didn't. You destroyed them. You didn't say these were precious to you. How can I put them together in a perfect way? And we could have taken your hand and run it down the rip, and shoop, there's gone. Oh, come on now, that kind of magic doesn't go. Yes, it does. If you wish to do it in slow motion, which most of you do, then what you're doing, Ingeborg, what you're doing is you're taking your needle and thread and going chip, 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 slowly going down and sewing it together. And then it's not there anymore. But you see, you can go whoosh, and it can be not there too. Or you can go slow motion. You know, the motion is our mind. And if we just see this very quickly done, we don't even notice the needle going back and forth and sewing it up perfectly, or we don't notice it knitting back together into its originally divine idea. You say, well, Herb, that's playing the game with the principle. No, listen. This is where the principle goes to work. In your head. Right in your head. And the principle goes to work in your head according to what sort of things you feed to the principle. Now, we can talk, as we did at the breakfast table, about relative absolute. We can talk about how the relative is the needle going back and forth, and how the absolute is click, returned to its original purity and integrity. Wouldn't you like that? I mean, here you are wearing a pair of ripped trousers, and you think, you know, I love them, they're my favorites, and, you know, they're getting a little bit old and falling apart, so to speak, and so, they're returned to their original purity and integrity, and they're back to their perfect expression that you first put them on. Isn't that nice? Now, why not? And that's just a matter of how fast the movement is in your beingness. Now, what do we know about energy? Come on, anyone, you can tell me. What do we know about energy? What do we know about energy? How does energy work? How does energy accomplish anything that we want to accomplish? Now think about this and remember this. Energy in slow motion is what we call a heavy force. Energy in quick motion is a fine, subtle force. Now you know that when you're lying on your deathbed, and they have the life support or gadgets on you reading what your life is, and you're going bloop, 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 according to your heartbeat, bloop, 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 bloop. And when you are alive and alert and fantastic and filled with power and life, your energy level is just shooting along there like crazy, having a ball. But the slower it gets, bloop, straight line, you're dead. You know? The energy stops pulsating. Now, can anything be more obvious than that to us? When we are active and dynamic and vital and alive, when we conceive of that needle sewing up our pant leg, or that it's returned to its original purity and integrity, we can do that. It's just a matter of putting our consciousness to work on these things, realizing that it is so now. We don't have to wait for another dimension. We don't have to wait for another time. I took a little quiz this morning on the computer that Sylvia got going again, and the quiz was, what are your ideas about God, salvation, and all that sort of stuff? And I took the quiz, and I'm sure I probably turned out to be sort of a rapscallion person, but in the quiz it said, you know, do you believe in one supreme God? Do you believe in God in a body? Or God not in a body? Or do you believe in these things? And it gave maybe about, 8, 7, or 10 questions. And they were kind of interesting. And so I filled them out. And I didn't get to the point where it tells you what it's all about, but that perhaps comes another page. I went to the end thinking I'd get there, but it didn't give it to you. it says, check this here and see how what kind of a Jew or Christian or Mohammedan, whatever, what kind of a person you are. And all it did was lead to a bunch of books they have for sale, which I thought was kind of not too cool, you know. In other words, it is misleading. And you see, that's what we are doing with our life. We're misleading. You're telling me you have a problem when what you're meaning to say to me is I have a solution. You're telling me that you have a desire when what you mean to say to me is my life is filled with every good and lovely thing that I could ever imagine it being filled with, you know. How are you going to get that energy moving at that very wonderfully rapid rate, which means fulfillment? Do you realize the saints are not living in a slow motion energy? They're living in an extremely vital energy. They are in tune with the infinite. And you see, we think that meditation is when your energy level is low. My goodness gracious, no. And meditation is when your energy is going right off the top of the scale. And when you're in illumination, when you're listening to your divine self, that energy is moving along so quickly and so wonderfully that it's your body, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, you just levitate. Hey, you know, you just levitate. You just teleport. You just do all those wonderful things. And we cannot do them because we're staying on that low level of energy. That low level of energy which is reminding us that I am not living what I'm talking about. But I am a living example, and you are a living example. You show forth exactly what you believe about yourself. You show it forth in your body. You show it forth in your thinking. You show it forth in your mind. Now, I was having a little trouble with Rhonda here for a number of years, and Rhonda was just like a show horse. She's just ready to prance, and she was right out in front there, and she was just loaded with spit and vinegar, and she was ready to go. And she was chomping at the bit, and she was digging her feet in at the starting gate, wanting to get out there and move. And she doesn't like racing. Well, anyhow, she was so convoluted. She was so filled with energy and wanting to release it, and wanting to get going and express herself, that the gate never opened. And so that energy sort of invalided, involved, involuted within her, you know. That's digestion and ingestion, you know. And she was ingesting this stuff and ingesting this stuff and ingesting this stuff. And then as I worked with her, and she worked mainly with herself, she began to realize that it's what she thinks that's important, not what she tells others. It's what she thinks that's important, not how she gets others to believe in her. Because nobody's going to believe her. They can't believe her because she is just too unbelievable, you know. It's like Jesus Christ. You believe him? You believe he walked on water? You believe he raised the dead? It's kind of incredulous, isn't it? But if you're a Christian, you sort of have to believe it because that's part of the scene. Okay, now, who would believe Rhonda? They would think this wild-eyed, fuzzy-tailed girl, she's got so many things going, and she's so brilliant, and she's just, you know, hyper, 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 hyper. Well, we've been channeling her. Not like the psychic channel, but we've been channeling her to take that energy and move it through a level that she understands and that all the world will understand. And so instead of coming out as energy that is just beyond the imagination of anybody who's listening to her, she is creating herself as one of the major poets of our time, expressing terms and philosophy and ideas in gentleness, in terms that anyone can understand if they will listen. Now, Jesus had the same problem. He said, if you have ears, you will hear me. Otherwise, you won't hear what I have to say. And Jesus gave parables which were so simple and so, yet so profound. They were beyond the comprehension of anybody because they couldn't see how it could be like that. It's like the story of Solomon cutting a baby in half. I mean, a king that cuts babies in half? How stupid, you know? Well, he didn't have to. He just said, all right, if you both want, you claim this kid, it's yours, we'll cut him in half and give each half. And the real mother, wanting her child to live and have a beautiful life more than anything else, immediately said, give it to her. Now the other woman, if she had been really a sharp, crafty cookie, she would have said, oh, I couldn't take the child. It belongs to you. It's your child, I know. It's your child. And thereby obviating the whole thing. But you see, when you are a thief in consciousness, when you are crafty in consciousness, it is so obvious. When you are naive in consciousness, when you are pure and beautiful, when you are real and true, it comes true all the time. Instantaneously, take him. I would not have any evil come to my son. Take him. He's better off alive in your stupid house than he is dead anytime, you know? Now, she didn't say stupid house, but you knew that she meant that. How can you work? Are you like Rhonda? Are you like a racehorse that's just standing at the gate waiting to go out, just filled with energy and filled with power, and you have no channel? I think most of you are like that. Most of you don't know what you can do. And here at the University of Healing, we present you with a variety of possibilities. We give you keyboards that you can type your ideas. We give you musical instruments that you can sing and play your ideas. We give you birds and music. We give you meditation. We give you introspection time. We give you toys like the Swimex and the other exercising tools. We give you cars. We give you food. We give you, you know, clothing. We give you non-clothing. We give you anything you want. But you see, you're not finding your place. Rhonda is finding her place, but she didn't know she was finding it. But she's finding her place. Now, whether she takes her place and expresses herself in the magnificence that she can, that remains to be seen. She could easily fall back into her laconic way of doing something and forget the divine wanting to express through her, because we all can do that. We can all fall back into our old ways. Well, it was so much easier before I had to think that I am in charge of my world. Every thought I think bears fruit and things like that. It's very easy to do that. But when you're a living example, well, you are, we always are a living example of what we believe. We always are. And sometimes we don't like the example we are, and nor do other people. And they say, yeah, but that's what you... Well, it wasn't real. I wasn't thinking. Yes, you were. You were thinking exactly what you wanted to do. You were thinking that you were not well. You were thinking that you didn't have the capacity. You were stupid. You were thinking that somebody else was smarter than you are. And like Ingeborg, you're running around kissing people's feet all the time. And what you should be doing is booting them in the butt with your foot, saying, let's move it, let's go. Let's get the show on the road, you know? And Ingeborg, isn't that what we should be doing? Yes. Now, when are you going to start? Now. Oh, I thought maybe you're going to wait till your 80th birthday. Now. Great. Or your 100th birthday. You know, a lot of people, they wait. But now. Now is the only time. Now is the precious time. So, okay, now. I am a living example. Mm-hmm. And I'm a living example, pure and simple, of what I believe. Now, what do I believe? All of you come up to me occasionally confused by something I'm saying or doing, and they say, Herb, you said that. Herb, that's contrary to what you teach. Herb, that's this. And I say, No, it isn't. What do you mean it isn't? I'm being a reflection of what you've got in your heart and mind right now. I'm being a reflection of it, and it doesn't affect me. It would affect the rest of the world, but it doesn't affect me. I'm being that reflection so you can see it right now. So you can see how the direction that you're going is going to take you someplace that you may not want to go. And you can reverse your action, or you can change your action. You can put a new cause in motion if you wish. But, you see, oh, I want to know all about absolute. I want to know all about the principle. I want to know about... You do not. You do not. Every time I bring up the absolute, every time I bring up principle, every time I bring up illumination, you want to put it in human terms. And that's okay. Hey, cool. When you're ready to really walk in the absolute light, in the total illumination, you will not think of a human attitude. You will not think of a human body. You will not think of anything. You look at some of these people that you call saints, some of these people who are really well along the way in their spiritual understanding. And what are some of the first things you say about those people? Look at their complexion. Isn't it beautiful? Look at their body. Look at their attitude. Look at their life. Aren't they wonderful? And hey, you can have a lot of weightlifters who have nothing upstairs, and they have beautiful bodies. And then you come along with an Arnold Schwarzenegger who has something upstairs and a beautiful body both, and you say, how did that happen? How did that happen? Now you see, in line with that, Marilyn Monroe had a beautiful body and beautiful complexion, okay? She was a beautiful girl. Her body and mind were beautiful. Her mind, yes, her mind. She was a very responsible businesswoman. But Marilyn Monroe chose to do a very stupid thing. She wanted to play the Dizzy Blondes. So the world knew her as a Dizzy Blonde. Beautiful, but dizzy. Beautiful, but dumb, you know? And so that's how she went through life. Even though she had many businesses that she was president of and head of and doing very successfully, even though she had a fine husband now and then, but the big thing was that the world thought of her as a dumb, dizzy blonde. And she also had to think of herself as a dumb, dizzy blonde because this is what she played in most of her movies. She was a gorgeous-looking woman. You understand that? A gorgeous-looking, her face and complexion and her whole body. She was still quite young when she left us, but she was a magnificent woman. But here she had everything going, and she had brains. But she played the Dizzy Blonde, and so she died the Dizzy Blonde. It's a very sensitive game we're playing. Why not play the brilliant blonde? Why not play Auntie Mame? You know? Auntie Mame sure had a lot of fun. She lived in a crazy world. If you haven't seen Auntie Mame, you missed an interesting adventure. And Auntie Mame had this young nephew who was going to come and be with her. It all seemed improper, but he was there. And she treated him with such respect and love, with such honor and such integrity. You said, wow, that woman really has class. And you saw how she was a diplomat and how she worked with all the people she worked with. Class. Now, who played Annie Mame? I don't remember. But the woman who played her was always, you know, right uptown, always beautiful and gorgeous and sang well and acted. Remember?
Ethel Merman.
Ethel Merman.
I think so.
No. It could have been. Could have been. Because I always think of Ethel Merman as the merman in Jackie Gleason's show, you know, or in somebody else's show. Anyhow. Okay. Yeah, perhaps it was Ethel Merman. But what was she doing? She was a very regal person. And she played a very regal role in Auntie Mame. Yet, very silly, very funny, very musical, but she was always on top, and she was always invited to fancy places. She never had any money, yet she lived in a very luxurious apartment. She traveled the world, and she always had everything, the clothing she had. I mean, my goodness sake, if all poor people could be poor like she was poor, they would have no problems. But it was a glorious show. Now, she, I don't know her life history, but I would imagine she lived a very lovely life. A lot of these movie stars are very selective of the roles they play. They're very selective of the things that, that should represent who they are and what they are, what their personality is, what their their belief of themselves. You see, they're living this here. I am a living example of what I believe. Now, what are you? What are you? Well, what do you believe about yourself? What do you think is important for yourself? What sort of goal do you have in yourself? Forget the absolute. That's taking care of itself. If you will take care of the relative, the absolute will take care of itself. Now, what would you do in the relative to make yourself prepared for absolute? I always remember we would go to the lake cottage for the weekend, or we'd go there for the summer. And on Friday night, we'd all come home from school, eager to go out to the lake. And Mother would have the food all packed and the stuff all packed, and we didn't need much clothing because we just wore swim trunks, if those, you know. And then we went to the lake cottage. And we got in our big old Buick or big old whatever it was, and with five kids and Mom and Dad, and we drove out there. We had a trailer behind sometimes hauling extra things. But if we were just going back and forth for the weekend and school wasn't yet out, and we would just be there for the weekend, it was wonderful. We made preparations for it. The necessities, just the necessities. We went out to the lake and we had fun. And we would start dashing up to the house from down below, and my dad would say, "Ahem," and immediately we would all stop. And then Mother would say, "Now you take this and you take this," telling each one of us what boxes to carry upstairs. Now, as soon as all the boxes are on the dining room table and your clothes are in your room, then you can go out and play. But not until, with seven helpers, you know, why waste it? Mother wasn't silly. And so we did our chore. But we had to prepare. We had to prepare by taking the food in the house and taking all the clothing in and the stuff that had to go in. So, as soon as we had everything ready, we stripped off our clothing and ran into the water. And of course, the water was like a bathtub. Eagle Springs Lake was just glorious. Now, but we had to prepare. If we didn't prepare by emptying the car and the trailer first, we didn't get to go swimming. We didn't get to do anything. There were times that we all were recalcitrant. We all were kind of mischievous, naughty little kids. You know, it sort of catches on. And when that happened, there was no problem. Pop didn't take out his razor strap and beat the living daylights out of us. We were just treated like non-entities. We were treated like we treated ourselves. And we learned soon, you don't do anything except to do the chores first and then go and play. And there's plenty of time to play, especially if you rush through the chores and you get them done well. Now, we did what was called for us. Now, that's on the relative level. Do you think we had fun swimming? You bet. Now, there were times when Dad got called away just as he pulled up there because the neighbor had a problem and had to see him, and Mother and Dad both went to them, and we went swimming first. And then when they came in, they said, you know, "Come on out, time for supper now." And so we'd come and sit at the table, and they'd say, "Did you enjoy your swim?" And sheepishly, we all had to agree we didn't, because we knew we didn't do what was right. We hadn't prepared ourselves for paradise. And so though we were in paradise, in this beautiful, wonderful lake water, with our little Mickey Mouse boat and our canoe and just having fun of our life, it wasn't really fun. Because we felt so guilty for not having done what we knew we should do. Now, you're like that. When you say, I'm sick, when you say, I got a problem of any kind, when you say, somebody else is creating a problem for me, somebody else is making it rough for me, anytime you say that, you are taking yourself out of your right to be in paradise. Nobody's doing it to you. You're doing it yourself. And, for instance, you say the dog messes on the carpet. And, you get real angry. Hey, that's you. That's you. You haven't trained that dog to do his duty outside. And so the dog does its duty wherever it must. We haven't trained ourselves to take the groceries out of the car first. Then we can go play. We haven't trained ourselves that first we have to say, I'm whole and perfect. And then comes our life in paradise of being whole and perfect. All the time. All the time. It's not just for one moment. It's not just for just a second or something like that where we can lose our remembrance. We have to have it all the time. All the time saying to ourselves, I'm whole and perfect. All the time saying to ourselves that everything is in divine order. All the time saying that all in my life is fantastic, fabulous, glorious, wonderful. You follow me? It just depends on who we are and what our life is. If we're going to live our life violating the principles that we know are true, then we can be in paradise and be totally unhappy. We don't deserve it. We don't deserve it. I was talking to some children the other day, and one little girl wasn't eating any ice cream. And I said to her, don't you like ice cream? Said, oh, yes. Oh, why aren't you having some ice cream? She said, I don't deserve it. I said, what do you mean you don't deserve it? She said, my mother said, everyone come and sit down at the table now. Don't make everyone delay having their ice cream. Come and sit at the table now. And I was talking to my girlfriend on the phone, and I didn't want to stop. And so I made the whole family wait till I finished my conversation on the phone before they could start eating their ice cream. And so I just couldn't make myself eat some ice cream because I felt so bad. You see, we block ourselves from paradise. We block ourselves from wholeness. We block ourselves from the experience of magnificence, all because we want to do it our way. We don't want to follow the rules. Now, what are the rules to perfect health?
I'm whole and perfect.
Sylvia, what are the rules to perfect health?
I'm whole and perfect.
Sylvia, what are the rules to...
I'm whole and perfect.
That doesn't sound like a rule for perfect health. That sounds like perfect health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do you say that when you want perfect health?
Because it's the truth.
Oh, it's the truth. Well now, why would that be the truth if you were evidencing something that wasn't the truth? Because the truth is always there. And though I might have an illusion of not being worthy for the ice cream, all I have to do is say to the rest of the family, I'm sorry, I won't do that again. When mother calls for any reason at all, I'll come right away and I'll say to my friend on the phone, let me talk to you later, I've got to go, mother's calling. Right now! Right now. And so your mind has to say, right now, there's no decision here. You know you're not going to feel good if you don't do what your mom asks you to do when she asks you to do it, because she's a boss. And she's a loving boss. She's not a dictator. She's not a shrew. She's not somebody who's always trying to give you problems. But she has a reason for doing it. Now, what is the reason that mom wants to do it? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The fact that mom wants you to do it, do it. The fact that mom wants you to do it, because mom is the one who always knows best for you. The day will come when mom's not there to know best for you, and by that time you will have learned what is best for you. You will have learned what to do under all circumstances. When you're with your mom, do you tell a lie? No way. When you're not with your mom, do you tell a lie? All depends. It should always be the same, that you just cannot tell a lie. A lie is like just choke you, and you can't do anything. You always tell the truth. And it may get you in trouble sometimes, but you always tell the truth. And if the truth gets you in trouble, remember the next time, don't do something that's going to get you in trouble. Be the master. Be in charge. Because you're fantastic. Yes, I am a living example. What are you a living example of? What am I a living example of? Do people look at me and say, oh, Herb, you know, you're pretty good. Oh, Herb, I really enjoy being with you. Herb, you know, you're something special, you know, a pat on the back. And Herb, you know, you're a great guy, and you're a diplomat, and you're this, and you're that. And, you know, you're God, Herb. You're Jesus, Herb, and all that kind of stuff. And I say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You say, Herb, what an ego you have. No. Thank you, thank you, thank you. For what you see in me is what you are. But you better be careful when you say that. Because if someone says to you, you're a terrible person, but what you see in me is what you are, get off of it. If they can see it in you, and then you can see saying something like that to them, you are awful. You really are. So if anyone ever makes an unkind remark to you, be the diplomat and come back and say, hey, how can I improve? How can I be all that I really want to be? I want to be perfect. You be perfect? My God, you're so far from perfection. You know, you wouldn't even know it if you saw it. And so you just say, well, how would I do it? Tell me how. And you persist lovingly and sincerely. And before you're done, the person is trying to figure it out too. And they come up with the conclusion, hey, you know, you're okay pretty much just the way you are. You're pretty wonderful. You see, we want to be masters of ourselves. We want to be masters of our world, master of our creation, master of our dreams, our desires. And how do we be master of ourselves, our dreams, our desires, our world? How do we do that? By just one thing, by liking yourself. If you like yourself, you will never do anything against your highest best and your whatever is good for you. You will never do it. If you like yourself, believe it or not, and this is a hard thing to believe, if you like yourself, everybody will like you. Now that's not going around smart alecking it, you know. But that's sincerely liking yourself, sincerely enjoying your own company. When a little boy is playing out in the sandbox and his friends come, he doesn't even look up to say hi to them. He plays with his toy, and they just jump in the sandbox and join him because they feel they are invited. They feel they're welcome. They feel that this is a happy time. And then they say, can I play with this? Can I play with that? Because it's not their toys, but the little boy's. And he says, sure. You know? This is what true happiness is. When you don't have to explain it to anybody, you don't have to prove yourself to anybody, you just live in your absolute perfection and your joy, and living that way, you're doing great. And you're asking for nothing from anybody. You're just living in that harmonious, wonderful feeling of goodness. You see? Now, wouldn't it be nice if all of life was like the boy playing in the sandbox, and others come and join him just because it's fun, they know they're welcome? Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if we were playing in our sandbox and people came along and wanted to join us? And we say, sure, go ahead. Now you see, here's a point that is very salient here. If someone comes in and wants to play in your sandbox, you do not say, did you wash your feet? Did you wash your hands? There's no pee-peeing in our sandbox here. This is our sandbox. We're all of us playing it together. Now, did you bring your toys? Did you do this? Did you do that? They don't think of saying such things like that. You know? They haven't that the slightest idea in their mind. In their mind that other kids are wonderful. The other kids do everything right. Even the ones who didn't do something right the last time. They're given a second, third, a hundredth, millionth chance to do it again and again, even if they keep bumming up, they keep making trouble. That's the purity of a child heart. And that's the purity of your heart in everything you do. If some man walks up to you and says, "Hey, you're beautiful," you say, "Thank you. I'd like to get to know you. Well, who are you?" You know? And so you talk. And he says, "Wow, you are precious. I'd like to go to bed with you." And you say, "Okay. I'm quite busy. My schedule is quite busy. But in a few years after we've known each other, we may find that our relationship will include that. But, you know, you're welcome to pursue being a friend if you wish." You don't say, "Why, you good-for-nothing person asking to go to bed." Well, that's the highest compliment he can give you.
Yep.
And it's the highest, the higher compliment would be, "Will you marry me?" And if he says, "Will you marry me?" and you know that he's a rascal, you just say, "Well, let's get to know each other a little better. I'm not opposed to anything, but let's get to know each other a little better. And after we know each other a little better, maybe being friends would be much more exciting than getting married, you know? Or maybe getting married is what we want to do." But never knock or put a person down. I've had many women ask me to get married. And you say, "Well, Herb, you're just really pretty, you know." But no, it's true. And I said to all of them, I said, "You pay me the greatest compliment anyone could ever pay me. That you would want to spend your life with me. That you would want to have me as a man in your world, as your one and only, you know." And wow, that's quite a privilege. I don't want to settle down with anybody right now. Maybe never, but I don't want to settle down with anybody right now. So we can be friends, you know. And that's great. But remember, whenever someone comes to you with any comment, even a naughty comment or a good comment, you have created them coming to you with that comment. Now, whether that comment bears fruit, it's up to you. Whether that comment is taken in what sense you want to take it, is up to you. But if you lose your cool, and you get upset because you think it is a naughty comment, then you've lost the benefit from it. Any comment that's made to you, take it as though you're the master and you're saying, "Yes, no, maybe, later, now, whatever." You know, there's no emotional problem there. Because you're just in charge. And you just say, "Hey, you honor me by asking me such a question, you know. Hey, would you like to go out to dinner tonight?" "Well, I really love to go out to dinner tonight, but I'm going out with someone else." "Well, tell him, you know, to go jump. It's my father." "Well, okay, would you like to come along? You know, I'm sure he'd be happy if you'd like to pay for all of us, you know." "Well, just a minute now. Hey, I just gave you an opportunity to be with me, which you wanted to do, and now would you pay for me?" "Yes." "Well, then why not pay for my dad? I mean, he's part of the picture tonight, you know. Another night, he might not be able to come with us." "Oh, God, yes, thank you." But, you see, these are all part of the game. They're all part of the game of you being the master. Now you say, "Oh, that's so simple, so mundane." No, it's not simple and it's not mundane. It is very real and it is very much everyday experiences that you have. When you are living in society, society is going to ask you to do things. It's going to ask you to be things. Now, Hillary Clinton is running for all sorts of things, and she's a senator of New York and that sort of stuff. And she has two homes. And she runs charity, not charity, but money-raising events in each of her homes twice a week for political candidates. I mean, she's making everybody love her. And she has given over $1 million to political candidates currently in New York. And if you don't think that those candidates are going to be supporting her, you got a guess. But she's sharp. Now, she knows what she's doing. And she's not letting anybody use her or letting anybody put her down. She always walks straight and walks clear. And you can be sure that when people try to put her down, what they're trying to put down is the fact that they don't like her success. Mm-hmm. Jackie Kennedy, they didn't like her success, even though you had to admire her because she was a fabulous woman. Mm-hmm. Well, Hillary went through some pretty rough things herself, and she's been called names herself, but she never allows the fact that she's called these names to bother her. She doesn't let being called these names make her feel insecure. She doesn't let that happen. Now that's a genius, you know? That's a genius. But like my mother always told us, sticks and stones can break your bones, but names can never hurt you. And that's true. That's true. And that's for us too. However, we should live our life so beautifully that the names that we are called are equally beautiful with who we are. And there are a lot of people we know who are called good names and supported. I just love reading in the Business Week magazine, every couple of weeks, maybe every 3 or 4 weeks, they have a series in there of businessmen who didn't. Businessmen who didn't cheat in their businesses. Businessmen who have the respect of the business community for not having robbed their companies, and stuff like that. And it is amazing.
How do they find them?
Well, first they find them by reference, because they ask the business community which businessmen have been stable and standard and do not fall under. And there's a lot of them that have been spoken badly about, but that was just somebody trying to put them down. Usually when you have people in high positions like that, they try to put you down so that somebody else can get your position. So the next person on the line can get it, and then you know that it's a little bit of underhanded stuff. It's just like Hillary Clinton. They tried to say that she was a lesbian, and she was this, and she was that. I mean, they tried to do everything to her. And with Clinton, they tried to do all sorts of things. But though it may have been an experience that one went through or not, that's not who they are. Because if they were evil, their evil would have destroyed them. You understand that? Mm-hmm. If they were truly contrary to society's attitudes for good and bad, they would not be taken. They would not be taken. And continually taken. Because if Hillary were not so good, she could have been put down a number of times, and she would never have succeeded as the senator from New York, you know, and she would never have succeeded in a lot of other things. And Clinton is still being named president of universities and of banks and everything under the sun, you know. And you have to wonder. In politics, there's always a lot of throat cutting, you know, a lot of backstabbing by people who want to get raised up in a position by hurting someone else. And sometimes they're successful. Sometimes they're successful because they get people who will cooperate with their statements and allow them to believe that sort of thing. And sometimes they're not successful. And where they're not successful is when it doesn't really matter to the people. Clinton is brilliant. It doesn't matter to him what people think and say. He lives his life in his own understandable way. And they try to show pictures of him as being, you know, in a rehab center for this and that and the other thing. And perhaps he wasn't, perhaps he wasn't. I enjoyed the the press. I think the press is such media, is such a remarkable organization. It's a remarkable organization. Now, understand me. What do you think of Bob Hope?
Wow.
Yeah, like wow. Bob Hope has been like Mr. Wonderful to the world. Mr. Wonderful. And some newspapers had the audacity to take pictures of him in his declining years as his health was going down and as his eyes were rheumy, and you know what rheumy means, and as his complexion and his attitude was just sort of not perfect. Terrible. Throughout the entire history of theater, FDR, Roosevelt, you know, throughout his activity in government, he was in a wheelchair. But they never showed the wheelchair. I mean, now, that is as honorable as you can be. It's his mind that we are working with. And our friend Ronald Reagan, he announced that he had Alzheimer's and that he would be declining in physical abilities and mental abilities, and that so therefore he was withdrawing himself from the public arena, which was intelligent. Now, he didn't immediately go into la-la land, you know. He went slowly. And his wife, credit to her, even with all the publicity she's gotten contrary-wise, she stood by him and stands by him yet. And here he is. That happened to him when he was in his 80s, and he's in his late 90s now, or more, and he's still going strong. He's not able to do a lot of things he'd like to do, but and he's not able to communicate like he'd like to do, but his body is still healthy. And it's amazing. And perhaps by the time he's still around doing fine, they'll find a remedy for it and bring him back so that he can live his hundreds in a healthy mind. And, you know, that's not unusual. That's not impossible.
Yeah, he can run another round as president.
Wouldn't that kill a lot of people? My goodness. That would shake them up. So I'd vote for him.
Yeah,
I'd vote for him. If he were back in his regular mind, even if he steps through half of the meetings, you know. No, really, because that's good. Because then they feel they can do things. But when he wakes up and he sees what they're doing, he just quietly exercises his authority. It's really wonderful. Really wonderful. You know, it's just like, what's his name? Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, he's the most idiotic, brainless person in the world. You know, like a fox. And he got into office and he talked with the cities in California, and all of the cities were saying, we need to have better state funds to operate our cities, and these state funds have been allocated ahead of time, and they should be given to us now. But the state legislature was not going to allow them to have these state funds because they were over budget. But Schwarzenegger says, no, the continuance of our cities and the fulfillment of our agreement with our people must be met. And so he had the authority to go over the head of the legislator and sign papers which would allow the states, the cities that is, to each have their annual funding. And of course the cities love him, and all the people in the cities love him, and the legislatures are kind of upset with him for going over their heads, but I think he has indicated that on behalf of the people, he is willing to do magnificent things. And you know, he's going to come out smelling like a rose. $28 billion in debt for California, and I'm sure that if he's allowed to stay in office, which I'm sure he will, if he's allowed to stay in office, that he will have that down to nothing in no time. You know? Because he does the impossible. He does the stupid. He does the unexpected. And he believes in himself. And he has that certain Austrian attitude about him, which, hey, I can accomplish anything. Who else do you know came from Austria? Hitler, yeah. Yeah. And Hitler was fantastic. The only thing Hitler did, he just made a few mistakes, and he wasn't stopped in making them. The federal government in Germany went along with him on the things he wanted to do, because he became a dictator. And if the federal government in Germany did not agree with this man, this is not an unusual thing, if they did not agree with this man, they would just have him put down. He would be destroyed. They would have him killed, or they would have him fed some food that would make his brain go la-la, you know, and he would not be, I mean, that stuff is so available. And but the people in Germany liked what he was doing. They agreed with what he was doing. The legislators agreed with what he was doing. It's not just the Hitler that was doing this. It was the whole nation of Germany that was doing this thing. Now, it doesn't sound good for the nation of Germany, but heck, the nation of Germany just loves war. They kept coming back to it and back to it and back to it, and they should wake up like Switzerland and say, to hell with it. Let's have peace. Let's live in a world of wonder and magic. I am a living example. I am a living example. What's your thought? Where do you want to live? What do you want to accomplish? How do you want to achieve things? And it's up to you how you do it. And however you want to do it is what you're going to do. You're a living example of who you are right now. And comments are made on campus here about some of these people have been here so long and still have little hang-ups and stuff. Hey, who's seeing the hang-ups? Who's seeing the hang-ups? Close your eyes. You're looking within yourself. You're seeing all of the little hang-ups that you haven't yet accomplished in your life being expressed by these people who are working so diligently on it. And hey, true, it should be solved by now, but you have no idea of all the things that they have already solved, of all the things that they have already managed, and they don't even know it. You know why they don't know it? Because once it's done, they don't remember it. And once you have accomplished your goal for yourself, with your aim and your desire, I mean, does Arnold Schwarzenegger think about becoming the governor of California? Hey!
No.
Thank you.
Because he is.
Not because he is. No. The fact is because he did, but no, he does not think of becoming the governor of California.
That's right, Jim.
Does he think of marrying Maria Shriver?
No.
They've been together for a long time, you know. We don't think of something that we have already accomplished. Does he say, I'm married to Maria Shriver? No, he doesn't say that. He just is. And he goes home at night and Maria Shriver is there. And he is there. You see? Like Mark, we would be marching with the Cub Scouts, and I'd be the Cub leader, and all the kids from Divorceville there would be holding on to me, and I would be their father figure and stuff. And Mark was up in front carrying the flag, and a couple of boys would say to Mark, how can you take this with all these kids loving your daddy like that, you know? And what did he say?
I
got him at home.
No,
I got him at home.
Me.
And you see, this is the fact. Mark wasn't jealous. He wasn't worried about getting enough affection for himself. He had me at home. And now what about you? Do you stand up for the principles that you love and admire and know are beautiful and good for you? And do you know that you don't have to prove it to anybody? You just be it. Be yourself and have fun. And when you do that, wow. You see, you can run after the absolute all you want. But take care of the relative first. And as you do that, you'll find that you've always been in the absolute. You've always been absolute and living an absolute consciousness. Fun, huh?
Yes.
Well, you guys have a lovely couple of minutes before we start again. And we're going to start next with our lecture 11, Fun Being Illumined. That should be delightful, shouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll see you in a few minutes.